everybody. This is the AM session of the Portland City Council. This is Tuesday, February 13th, 2018. I know Commissioner Saltzman will be here momentarily, and Commissioner Udaly will be here momentarily as well. We have a single item today. Carla, do you want to read the item, please?
It's a work session.
Oh, yeah, it's a work session. Good morning, Commissioner Fish.
Mayor, thank you, and colleagues, and honored and invited guests. I'm very pleased to kick off this work session. Colleagues, we are in the midst of a historic housing crisis. And what we know is that too many cost-burdened renters are having difficulty making their rent payments, which includes charges for water and sewer services. A solution to this problem has long eluded our public utilities for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is in most multifamily properties, we don't individually meter people's apartments. And so we've had a significant challenge figuring out how to distribute and bring our discount programs to some of the neediest and most vulnerable people in our community. But we've achieved something of a breakthrough, and there are days when I'm especially honored to serve as the commissioner in charge of our public utilities, and today is one of them. So let me give you the run of show. We will be discussing proposed changes to the financial assistance program the Portland Water Bureau administers on behalf of the city's two utilities, the Water Bureau and the Bureau of Environmental Services. Since last summer, our team has worked closely with nonprofit partners, many of whom are here today, the Portland Utility Board, and we're joined by the co-chairs, and the Oregon Citizens Utility Board to find new ways to build on our nationally recognized financial assistance program. The premise is simple. Some of our neighbors need a little extra help. The proposal we'll discuss today offers a new and better way to reach those customers, and for the first time, to reach renters in multifamily apartment buildings. I'm pleased to have so many of our community partners here today, and Deputy Director Gabe Solmer will introduce them shortly. Our presentation will be led by Gabe Solmer, Deputy Director, Kathy Cook, Customer Service Manager. Now, if you have had any experience with Kathy, you know that her name is Cook, not Koch, and not Coke. And if you know anything about German, you know that Cook actually means cook. So, a little history. What you may not know is that Kathy has served our city for 28 years. And she is a nationally recognized gem. And she was making some noise earlier today about being in her early 50s and keeping all of her options open. And I just want you to know, in our most recent contract we struck with her, it gives her no option to take anything like early retirement, now or in the future. We're also joined by Liam Frost, who is the special project manager. And I want to give Liam a special shout out, because when we asked him to take on this assignment, we asked him to come up with a solution to a problem which had eluded not just Portland, but cities across the country for a very long time. And I think Liam's secret weapon here is that he both is a systems guy that knows a lot about how the utilities are run, but he's also a housing guy that understands how the housing system reaches and serves our most vulnerable residents. And as you'll see, he brought both of those skill sets together in working with the team to come up with what I think is a really innovative solution. So what are we going to do today? This is a work session, and we're interested in your initial feedback. We're interested in all your questions, including proposed amendments for the future. We will follow up with you in the coming weeks, and you'll hear more about this proposal when the bureaus present their budgets at the end of March. I think it's scheduled for March 29. In terms of council action, the very earliest we would come back to council to institutionalize anything that we're discussing today would be in May. And that would be when we would come with a proposed intergovernmental agreement with one of our community partners to administer the program. And that would probably be the time that we take up any amendments that people want to the broader program. Let me say that I am grateful to my colleagues and to our guests for taking time today for this important discussion. I'm really excited about the good work that's been done, and I'm pleased to turn it over to Gabe Solmer to kick us off. Gabe?
Thank you so much, Commissioner Fish, and I'm pretty excited as well. And I just wanted to start off by recognizing some of the community partners that we have with us today so that you'll know who we've been working with over these long months. And if I can have our community partners stand to be recognized when I read out their names. We have some people watching from home, but in the room here we have our Public Utility Board co-chairs, Colleen Johnson and Alan Warman. Janice Thompson, who is our liaison from the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon, is watching from home, so we're pleased to have her with us that way. And we have Irina Skrabek from NAYA, Native American Youth and Family Center. We have Brianna Winterborn from Elders in Action, and Ian Slingerland from Home Forward. And Alan De La Torre from Age Friendly Cities couldn't be with us. He has the flu, so he is watching from home. But we have Linda Nguyen from IRCO, Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization, and Yana Hawk from Impact Northwest. So for everyone who is watching either from home or in person, we thank you for taking your time to be here today.
Yeah, and I'd like to just state that on behalf of the City Council. We know people are very, very busy, and I know all of you in particular are very busy, and we're very, very grateful to have people of your caliber working with us in this capacity. So thank you very much for your time on an ongoing basis, and thanks for being here and listening in today, too. Thank you.
And I also wanted to recognize our city staff that's with us today. We have Jenny Scott from the Auditor's Office, and Jonas Berry and Sherry Peterson from the Bureau of Environmental Services, who's a great partner with us in this whole process. And then I also will acknowledge Water Bureau staff, including my boss, Mike Storr, who's watching and may comment later. We'll see how we do. But for now, I just want to thank everyone for being here and for allowing us the time to present these proposals. We're pretty excited about what we've come up with, but they are proposals. We would really welcome your feedback and your thoughts about what we've put together, what will work for the city moving forward, and for all of the customers that we serve.
Hey, can I make a suggestion, Mayor? This is a kind of a timed presentation. If colleagues could, unless there's something really unclear about this, if we could hold our questions to the end of the presentation, and then we think there's a number of areas people are going to want to go really deep, and we have some follow-up materials we can share with specific colleagues who raise questions. But I'd like to get the big picture out there first.
Sure. This is your rodeo. That's fine.
Thank you. And the proposals we have for you today are the product of many hours of research, many conversations with stakeholders, direction from our commissioner in chief. So we'll lay them out for you. We'll answer any questions that you have. But we are very excited to move forward and to build on the program that we have already set up. So we'll go through a little bit of the program history so you'll have the context for how these proposals would work in with the current services. We'll talk a little bit about the need on the ground that we're responding to and how we meet that challenge, what those five proposals are, and then a little bit about next steps. And with that, I'll turn it over to Kathy, who can go through a little bit of the history of the program.
Good morning. I'm also excited to be here. If by excited we mean nervous, that's me. For the history of the low-income program, back in 1992 when BES started doing the Big Pipe project, the city was interested in establishing a discount program to lessen the impact of the rising rates. A task force was put together, and in the late 94, the low-income program was approved by council. The first discounts could be seen on bills in June of 95, but they were retroed back to January of 95. You'll also hear me call the low-income discount program LINK. When it was first created, the bill discount amount was for 15% of a typical customer use, and in 96 it increased to 25%, and then in 2009 it was increased again to 50% of the typical use where it is today. In addition, we have a crisis voucher program for those who are on our LINK program. When that started, the crisis voucher dollar amount was $50, and you had to be in danger of shutoff. In 1997, it increased to $75 and could be applied at any time in a 12-month period. In 2004, we increased it again to $150 where it is today. We also have a fixture repair program. Originally, it only covered minor indoor leaks and toilet leaks. But in 1997, we expanded that program to include underground leaks and leaks behind the wall. To expand our program further, in 2007, we created a safety net program. This program isn't just for low-income customers. It's for those who are experiencing a personal temporary crisis. That could be within the last 6 months you lost your job, you have medical bills, maybe you went through a divorce. People are eligible every 3 years. It's not meant to be a permanent solution. And while you're on the program, you don't receive any late fees and you're not shut off. It is an interest-free extended payment arrangement. And at the end of 12 months, if you're successful, we will write off 50% of the remaining balance or $300, whichever is less. As you can see, we reviewed the program over the years and made changes as necessary. In 2016, our focus for improvements was how to remove barriers for customers who have mobility issues. So we created what we call an honored citizen extension. With Link, you have to requalify every 2 years. But we know that with some senior citizens and maybe some disabled folks, their income isn't likely to increase, so we don't make them renew every 2 years. We've given them a long-term renewal date. And in just 4 months, we have over 600 people enjoying the hassle-free renewal. In our system, we have what we call courtesy emails. So a lot of times, seniors want to maintain their independence and maintain their own bills, manage their own bills. But we do have some adult children who may want to support that, but worry about their parents maybe missing a bill or becoming late. So we've set it up to, with their permission, to send the courtesy email to the adult child so that they could get involved right away if a parent were to fall behind. We put our Link application online. Customers can go to any one of our 9 neighborhood partner agencies, or they can fill out the form online, mail it to us, drop it by, or as of 1 month ago, they can apply electronically, directly, and securely online. In the first 30 days, we've received 94 applications that way, and 77 of them answered a voluntary survey about the demographics in which we can use that kind of information to... We can use that information to help us do some targeted outreach. For expanding enrollment, we've partnered with various agencies for automated solutions to share information. So if a customer were to have qualified from some other program outside the city, we know that their program would match our requirements, then we're trying to work with them to see that they don't have to apply for us. We can just get that information. It prevents them from having to apply twice. For our current services, as you heard, we have the bill discount. That is about $150 per quarter for water, sewer, and stormwater services. If your income is at or below 60% of the state median, then you can qualify. Again, you can apply at the 9 agencies throughout the Portland area. To qualify, we need the income documentation and the number in the household. Again, you're eligible for 2 years, and you do need to reapply unless, of course, you're an honored citizen. We do send a letter 2 months before the discount expires just to remind you to recertify. And if you don't, we'll call you anyway. And we have currently 6,600 customers participating in that program. We do offer flexible payment arrangements. They are incredibly flexible and generous arrangements. I think we're very different from other utilities in that respect. When you bill quarterly, it basically allows you to pay whatever you want, whenever you want, as long as you pay the bill before the next bill comes out. The trick is, of course, you need to call us and set up that payment arrangement. We make about 85,000 payment arrangements a year. We do have some customers who don't honor that first one, but we'll still work with you if you call us back. At some point, of course, we have to take action, but for the most part, people pay when they say they're going to. For those who don't...
Do you need to renew that every quarter?
The payment arrangement? Well, it's just a matter of what you need when you need it. So if you were to bill out again and wanted to do something different with that due date, then yes, you would call again. for monthly statements, for those who don't want to call again, we have a program where we still read you quarterly, we still bill you quarterly, but we will break up the payments into a third. So essentially, if you had a $300 quarterly bill, we would bill you $100 the first month, $100 the second month, and by the time we're billing you the final $100, you're ready to bill out quarterly again, and then we would break that one up into three. You don't need to call for that. You just need to set it up. So it depends. You know, we educate our customers on what program fits best for you. Do you need the flexibility of the due date, or, you know, are you in construction or real estate where your income isn't totally consistent? Then we offer that kind of flexibility. You pick your due date. If you're okay with the due date as we have and you just want to not pay that chunk at once, then you can do monthly statements. So whatever it is that works for you. And we do have over 21,000 customers on monthly statements right now. The crisis voucher we talked about, you do have to be on our low-income program. And a crisis is supposed to be something like your car broke down and it's in the shop. And so you need you have that unexpected expense and you need more help. You're eligible every 12 months. We do have some customers who put it on the calendar and say, I'm ready for my crisis now. It's not exactly supposed to work that way, but we are pretty loose on what constitutes a crisis. Last year, we provided 2,400 crisis vouchers. For our fixture repair program, you do have to qualify for LINC, and in this case, you do have to be a homeowner. You fill out an application that goes to the county. We give up to $2,800 per repair. If it's more expensive, the county does let us know in case we want to up that for that particular customer. And last year, we served 83 households for almost $94,000. We have the utility safety net program that we talked about, and there's 115 customers on that right now. And as we grow our financial assistance services team, this is one tool we hope to utilize further. We do offer free water conservation kits. The kits provide water-saving devices such as low-flow shower heads, shower timers, dye tabs, faucet aerators. Customers can come by and get them, or we can mail them. And we've provided over 380 last year. For this quote that you have in front of you, it's incredibly meaningful to me because we live that exact challenge every day. I've worked for the Water Bureau in customer service for almost 28 years, and I've been in the American Water Works Association for over 20 of them. The AWWA is the largest nonprofit water agency in America, and I'm involved at the regional and national level. I also co-founded the Water Customer Care Forum, which is a national forum made up of senior management level executives that are in charge of the meter to cash cycle. I only mention this to you to let you know I'm very aware and involved in the challenges my peers and I face when it comes to affordability issues. We are all facing what is shown here. Our program is truly known and recognized as a model to aspire to. Our staff has authored articles in journals, presented at webinars, and has presented at AWWA's international conference. We realize, though, that even with this recognition, we cannot stop there. Portland is changing, and we need to continue to find innovative ways to meet those changing needs. I'd like Liam to talk about some of the ways we think we can do that.
Thank you, Kathy. Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. Liam Frost, Portland Water Bureau. So as Kathy walked you through the history there, over the past 20 years of managing this program, the Bureau has periodically reviewed and responded to changing needs by strengthening their existing services. So the question is, why now? What's happening that is prompting us to do another review and proceed with these proposals that are in front of you today? Well, it's not going to be any surprise to you all here that affordability has become one of the main issues facing the city, and we're not unlike many other cities in the United States. So if you take a look at this graph, specifically, I'd like you to take a look at the blue and gray lines. The blue line represents the lowest income Portlanders, while the gray line represents the highest income. As you see over time, the population of lower income Portlanders has decreased, almost in a mirror image of the way that higher income folks has increased. You'll also notice the orange line, the folks in the middle who are continually getting squeezed throughout the past decade. So what we know, as housing costs have caused this affordability issue in Portland, it leaves less on the table for lower income households to cover basic and essential services like water and sewer. Because you don't have your monitors in front of you, I'm going to walk you through each slide. So if you want to turn the page to the next graph.
Just before you go on, I just want to point out that for lower and middle income folks, they're doing worse now than they were in 2005.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And if you take a look at the next graph, the changing profile becomes even more stark and urgent when you look at it in terms of race and ethnicity. Anecdotally, in meeting our community stakeholders last summer, we hear that as Portland has changed, the need has changed. And they kept telling us that people are hurting and need a little bit more help to get by. So, in meeting the challenge of a changing Portland, at the beginning of this process last year, we established three goals. So, that's on your next slide. The package of proposals before you today are all driven by these goals. We want to be laser-focused in getting our resources to the folks that need them most. We want to be able to reach customers without accounts. Those are our multifamily renters who do not have a Water Bureau account. And finally, crack that nut, that problem that's been nagging at us for years. And then ultimately reduce our shutoffs for low-income customers by sharpening our existing tools. Now, we couldn't have done this on our own. Beginning last year, the Water Bureau set out to meet with a number of our community partners, as well as different sources of data in the city and at the county. A large part of my own job for the past 8 months has been pouring through different industry publications and webinars and whatnot, but equally as valuable, if not more so, were the meetings with the folks on the front lines, talking to families every day, having a hard time out there, paying their rent and paying the utility bills. As we developed our various policy proposals throughout the past 8 months, the city auditor released an audit, and the four recommendations should be in front of you on the next page. It was reassuring that the goals that we came up with for this current round of proposals aligned almost exactly with her recommendations. It's always nice to know that a third party is agreed with the path that you're headed down. In that audit, too, if you go to the next page, the auditor covered a number of other areas and analyses in the audit, including shutoffs, which we know is a particular interest to council. In this graph on slide 11, you'll see that most of our shutoffs are resolved within 1 day. So, if you turn to the next slide, you'll see the list of our five proposed enhancements that I'll walk you through today. With our goals set and input from our stakeholders, and also the reassurance we got from the auditor's recommendations, we believe that these were the best we could come up with. They've been vetted by a number of internal and external stakeholders. So I'll go through them all one by one, and I look forward to hearing your feedback. Okay, so proposal number one, to create a low-income services team. It's not yet branded. There have been some names floated around, like financial assistance services team, so that would be fast. We haven't decided yet, so any input on the branding would be helpful. But the idea here is to consolidate all of our low-income services into one team. And we're focusing really on three things here, and this aligns with the auditor's recommendations, and that is to provide specialized service to people in poverty. It's to be data-driven and provide analysis and policy proposals as necessary as the need changes over time, and to use that data to be more targeted in our outreach and reach our customers who qualify but don't have access currently to our services. So this will be a team of three upon approval of the budget this year. And they'll be responsible for a number of different issues. So in real terms, what it means is if you have an issue paying your bill and you fulfill the income requirements, you will pick up a phone. There'll be a dedicated phone number for this team, and you'll call them directly. Currently, that function is spread out amongst customer service. If you go to the second page after this, slide 14, we have our second proposal. Kathy mentioned the crisis voucher earlier, and that has evolved over time, as she talked about. The last time we increased the value of the crisis voucher was in 2004, 14 years ago, from $75 to $150. What's important to remember here is that you're not entitled to $150. You're entitled to up to $150 to cover the debt that you owe the Bureau. As Portland's become more expensive to live in, we heard from community partners that they need more flexibility to cover some of the debt that folks owe beyond $150. We've come up with two options. We're working with our oversight committees, the pub and the cub, to figure out which option is appropriate. We have heard from our community partners that preferably the $500 would be the most flexible for them to use in severe cases. Moving on to proposal number three. We are proposing here to adjust our income qualification guidelines. So when you call up and you can't pay your bill, you'll have a customer service representative talk you through the issue, and they will figure out whether you could apply for the low-income discount. You'll go to an agency, fill out a form, and you qualify. Our income guidelines are currently tied to the state's median family income. That's by virtue of when we launched the program back in the mid-90s. It was tied to a lot of state benefits and used that as a model. In that time, Portland's income profile has obviously diverged from places like Josephine County. As you can see from the slide on slide 15, for one person at 60% of median family income, there's a $10,000 a year difference there. We expect that by expanding the income qualification guidelines and having a better reflection of local income, that up to about 1,000 more customers will be eligible to sign up. For our fourth proposal, this proposal is really designed to meet the needs of our lowest income customers, those folks who are in poverty. When we crunched the numbers, we found that over half of our currently enrolled low-income discount participants are in poverty. As Portland's become more expensive, and as I poured through all that industry data and current best practices, there has been an idea brewing of a tiered rate system. Now, this kind of is a hybrid of that idea. But what we really want to focus on here is providing the relief where it's most needed. So after meeting with community stakeholders last summer, we learned that many of our lowest income customers are just one crisis away from disaster, essentially, and needed that extra relief. If you look at slide 16, you'll see this in terms of the numbers. So a typical four-person family under 30% of our median family income earns about $22,000 a year. If this program is approved through the budget, they would be paying about $20 to $25 a month for sewer, stormwater, and water fees. Again, this is an example of us sharpening our existing tools to meet a changing need and making our system more equitable. Then our last proposal today is the one that the commissioner teed up at the very beginning, and it really comes down to one question. How do you provide assistance to a customer that doesn't get billed? A customer that consumes water, expels water, and even pays for water, but indirectly through their landlord. And this is a question that hasn't just vexed the Water Bureau for years and years and years. This is a national issue that folks are really trying to get to, given the affordability issues in most cities in the United States. So if you go to slide 18, there's a simple proposal. Well, full disclosure, I used to work for Commissioner Fish, and this has been a priority, more directly as it were, and this has been a priority for the Commissioner ever since I worked for him, and we kept going round and round with the city attorney about how best to get to these customers. And some of the solutions, you know, passed a legal test or met the requirements of the charter, but they also involved astronomical costs to cover the administration of it. So it's kind of a balance of meeting the charter requirements and not burdening the Bureau and thus other ratepayers with an unmanageable extra bureaucracy. So what we were looking for was an existing system to get the assistance out. So you'll see a simple proposal. It really isn't that simple, but this is what it all comes down to provide up to $500 in utility crisis assistance per year by investing in a proven program. Now, I should tell you that this $500 would be paid in the form of rent to a landlord through an existing system, and that $500 represents approximately 80% of the water and sewer costs in the average Portland apartment per year. So let me repeat that. The $500 represents 80% of the average consumption of water and sewer only in a Portland apartment annually. Okay. So how would it work? Well, on slide 19, you have a...
I just asked, why is it so much less than single family home?
What do you mean?
$500 a year is much less than the $200 or $300 a month that I'm paying.
So
why is the cost for...
The typical customer, Commissioner Fritz, in our system, homeowner pays a little over $100 a year. The typical customer. If you were in a multifamily, depending on how the landlord allocates the costs, in the aggregate, it's much less.
You're talking about the water cost, not the combined bill.
We're talking about water and sewer only. We've stripped stormwater out of it. We stripped Portland Harbor out of it, too. And by virtue of living in a multifamily building, it's going to be a lot less than a single-family home. And the way they consume water is a difference in behavior. The numbers that we use were from the census and our own consumption data to crunch that. And it's very similar, the way that we model the current discount for single-family homes. There we use the median consumption in families.
I'll just give you an example, since I'm a renter that's experiencing this. We don't have a washer-dryer in our apartment. I don't have a lawn to water. I only have one child at home now, not two. He's actually reluctant to take showers. So, I mean, if we start adding it up, we don't consume a lot of water or discharge a lot of water. And so some of our other utility costs are actually comparable to or greater than our water sewer. We can get you the backup numbers.
No, that's fine.
Because it is a striking contrast with typical homeowners, but it nonetheless is what for many cost-burdened renters is the breaking point.
You know, good explanation. I don't need any more. That's just.
Thank you. So how do we get the $500 to renters in need? Slide 19 goes through a flow chart for you. So let's take it from the top left. And right now is about the point I should tell you that we're partnering with HomeForward on working towards this solution. So we started conversations with Ian Slingerland, who's here. He's head of the Homeless Services Division for HomeForward. They manage the Short-Term Rental Assistance Fund for the Portland metro area, or Multnomah County more specifically. And they have a number of sources for rent assistance. So the city and county put money in, the state puts money in, and the feds put money in too. So what we're proposing is an additional source from BES and the Water Bureau to complement and supplement those existing sources. They each have their own criteria for qualification, just like we will, in order to meet certain charter requirements. So that money goes to HomeForward. They contract with 19 community organizations, some of whom are here today because they overlap with our own contractors. And the idea here of working with HomeForward is leveraging that existing infrastructure to get the money out the door to the folks that need it. So that very end dollar is paid for by the agency directly to the landlord on behalf of the renter. Remember, that limit of $500 represents utility cost only, but in the form of rent. If you move to the next slide, Commissioner Saltzman.
Each agency will have its own criteria.
Not each agency, each source of funding. Yeah, so CDBG, home funds might have different criteria.
Sixty percent
of MFI.
Oh, 60%.
Yeah. Thank you.
And I think it's worth observing that because we have three current and former housing commissioners here, the short-term rent assistance program, which is also known by the acronym of STRAW, has proven to be one of our most cost-effective investments at the city and the county level. It is at the heart of what we fund at the Joint Office for Homeless Services. It's a big part of our program addressing homelessness countywide. And one of the reasons is it's a flexible dollar. It allows us to keep people from falling into homelessness. So it keeps people in their apartment, which has multiple benefits, including children being ready to go to school and not disrupted. It also allows us to rapidly rehouse people. So it's a program that has a fantastic track record. We would have them administer our program under our criteria. But instead of creating our own system, we would use a system that's already working brilliantly with community partners.
And is that short-term rent assistance? Is that paid directly to the landlord as well?
The landlord, yes.
Yes.
And what, with landlords doing all kinds of awful things in relation to rents and such, how do we then, in either program, how does it make sure that the tenant is safe?
Well, what we know from Home Forward is they track each case. So they have a 97% success rate after 6 months of receiving this assistance. And I think it's about 90% of 1 year, after 1 year of housing retention. So we know that the system works, and we know that the dollar is effective.
And we know that the landlord doesn't find another way to kick out the tenant.
That would be more of a question for Home Forward than for the Water Bureau. We would like to contract with them and use their services. And we have them here today, too. So that's a lot of information and a lot of details, but what it really all boils down to is working with Home Forward, we're able to meet that balance, upon approval, of course, in the budget process, of meeting the charter requirements as well as not overburdening the Water Bureau with administration to get the crisis assistance to those renters in need. And when we say renters in need, we're talking about Water Bureau customers. They consume it, they expel it, they pay for it. I expect a lot of questions. I'm going to pass it back over to Kathy to talk about next steps.
Our next steps will be, we will be back here for the budget work session on March 29th. In May, you'll see us come here with IGA with Home Forward about the program Liam was just talking about. In June, there will be the budget approval. And then in July, should the budget be approved, we will create the low-income team that we've been discussing. We'll launch this Home Forward multifamily program. We'll do the service enhancements, which is raising the crisis voucher, those kinds of things. And we'll have a team the right size to help us do the ongoing monitoring and data analysis. And then after a year of having done the program with our partner, we will be providing a report on its success at that time.
I have a number of questions.
Sure.
First of all, so you have five proposals on the table, and I want to thank you. Excellent presentation. It was very succinct, and I think these are I appreciate you starting with the values and establishing those so that we have some context for each of the recommendations. So you have five recommendations. Can you help me understand to what degree each of these proposals is either utility-based or general fund-based? So you started off with creating the low-income services team. Is that a general fund request for the FTE, or does that come out of utility payments?
That's an easy answer. That's all utility.
Okay. And is that true with the then crisis voucher as well? And income qualifications are their own thing, and you made a compelling case there. Same with the discount. And explain to me how number five works in terms of where do you actually generate the initial capital outlay?
So we're budgeting, as you can see, for $600,000, $400,000 from BES and $200,000 from water. That's where we're capping it at. We're working with Home Forward right now to establish whether that's the correct amount, but it will be not beyond $600,000.
And that would, again, be through the ratepayer structure, and you have confidence, and you there is a bullet point, so I assume you do, but I just want to confirm you have confidence that this is all consistent with Anderson.
Let me jump in on that one.
Commissioner, thank you.
So, Mayor, early on in the process, we asked the lead attorneys in the Anderson case to provide legal guidance to the city about what you could and could not do, and we asked them to take a very conservative approach. We've recently settled the Anderson case, which was a case that challenged approximately $120 million worth of spending by the utilities, and was ultimately resolved for a payment of $10 million, $3 million of which were attorney fees. The bulk of the claims in that case, as you know, had to do with Superfund and who would pay for it, the polluters or homeowners. But given the fact that we have learned a lot through the Anderson experience, we asked the senior team that worked on that case to provide legal guidance. They have looked at this program, and by the way, this builds on an existing program. We currently have programs in place that are ratepayer funded So this simply enhances those programs. And they have given us a legal opinion that this is consistent with the charter. That's the question. Does the charter allow us to do this? They've done a detailed analysis and concluded that this is consistent with the charter.
Very good.
Within the discretion of the council to adopt these enhancements.
Excellent. Thanks, Commissioner Fish. I appreciate that. And then one final question. Home Forward is obviously an excellent partner. I have a lot of confidence in Home Forward. How does this particular service to low-income renters, is there a hierarchy of services given that they provide other services to low-income renters? Where does utility support come in that hierarchy, or has that been established yet?
Well, it would function in that family of different sources of funding. So the best way to explain this probably would to be give you an example of a family in crisis. So like Kathy said, the car's in the shop or there's a health care emergency. You can't pay your rent, you miss your rent, you're at risk of eviction. You go to a community agency and you tell that caseworker what your situation is. That caseworker then will say, you owe $2,000. So what are my sources of funding that I can use here? Well, I can use $1,000 of home funding. I can use $500 of CDBG. I'm missing that extra $500. Where am I going to get that? Well, I have this Water Bureau fund now that we can access to supplement
an existing case. Example, you just used the utility rate support as the last dollars in. And my question is there any form of policy that says they're the last dollars in, or is it how does one actually make that determination?
The question of which pot is used for what purpose is a detail to be worked out. And I think, actually, you're raising an even more important policy question, which is, in any intergovernmental agreement that we have with Home Forward to administer this program, we want an absolute guarantee that this is additive and not backfilling. In other words, this program is not intended to be able to replace a shortage of straw that would otherwise be used for another purpose. This we're going to have to come up with some matrices that make clear this is additive and this is getting at customers that are rent are cost burdened and for whom the utility expenditure is the trigger. And that would have to be worked out very carefully in the terms of an intergovernmental agreement.
Excellent. Thank you. I appreciate it. And thank you. I think this is an innovative approach. I appreciate that.
So we, in the discussion of how to help renters otherwise and in relocation fees and other, we heard that landlords who had not previously separated out utilities were starting to charge for utilities. Is there a way to target this program if that's the tipping point? Whether there isn't a car broke down, there isn't a change in the situation. The problem is that the landlords started charging for utilities.
So that's actually a detail we're working out with Home Forward right now. We're talking about situations where the landlord uses a third party to collect utilities too, or utility charges. So we're working that out right now, and we'll come back with a lot more details when the IGA comes to you in May.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you for the report, and I want to commend you on figuring out what seems like a really elegant solution to a problem that seemed kind of impossible to solve. I mean, this was of interest to me coming into council, and Commissioner Fish very graciously invited me to give input, and I gave none because I really couldn't work out the problem of how do we assist people that don't have their own water meter. So thank you for that. Thank you also for raising the eligibility to better reflect the reality in the city of Portland. I think we do have to acknowledge, though, that we are only getting to a small fraction of our population that's living in poverty, so I don't want to discount what we're doing, but I think we always need to figure out how to do more.
Respond to that real quickly.
Yeah.
I just want to be very clear. The scope of the program and the budget of the program, now that we've been told it passes legal muster, is a council decision, and we will present in response to any inquiries during the budget process, we will present answers to questions about if we serve more people, what's the cost, what's the potential rate impact, what's the trade-offs. That's information that we expect the PUB, our oversight body, will also have. But at the end of the process, the council can set the amount of money that's dedicated in year one as we sort of test drive this thing. And the amount of money, in turn, dictates how many cost burden renters we serve. We have plugged in some numbers to begin the conversation, what we think is reasonable, based on some historical spending we've done at the utilities. The mayor's his questions makes clear, however, that it is a closed system. It is utility dollars. It is reasonably related. It's related to the provision of utility services. Council has the exclusive right to set the scope and the size of the program.
Oh, that's good to know. I'll be wanting to talk to you about that further. My only other concern is barriers to participation really in any of your services designed for people who need assistance or flexibility in paying their bills. I heard you say, Liam, by the way, can I borrow Liam to give all my presentations? Because I think the accent really helps.
I used my Andy Hopkins today.
Yes.
He spent 6 months in a Berlitz program picking up this Welsh accent because he thought it might enhance the overall impact of what he was doing.
Sorry. Okay. Back on track. I love an accent. Okay.
I was thinking how it's really slits, Liam.
I know.
So I heard you say that someone who wants to qualify for this program may have to go to an agency and fill out a form. Perhaps that's the only way to do this, but I am always interested in looking at how we can decrease the barriers to participation because in a lot of cases we're dealing with individuals who just having to take half a day, take a bus across town, wait in line, find documentation. It's really is a barrier, and people go without help that they qualify for because of it. I'm just wondering, with some of these items, could someone automatically qualify if they receive SNAP? Because someone else has done the work of determining eligibility for us, at least at a certain level.
I can start answering that, and then I'll let Liam and his accent continue. One of the issues that that you raised is that barriers to access. That's why you see so many of our community partners here today, because it's absolutely a concern that they have as well. And I just wanted to acknowledge David DiMatteo from the Latino Network, who is with us as well. These are amazing partners, and we know that there can also be cultural barriers as well as time and energy to get across town. So we know that there are people that won't come to a government agency, but that will come to their community partners in their own neighborhoods. And so that's why we make sure that that is a way that people can access us as well. As Kathy mentioned, we also have an online application that is mobile friendly, so that is available if people don't have access to a computer. We know that even that is not enough to meet everyone. So really it's about gathering the data so we can do that pinpointed, targeted outreach. So we're not just we're casting the broad net, but we're also casting the narrow targeted outreach to make sure that people know about the services, they know about it in the language that they speak, that they have that access, and that they know where they can get the help.
And let me say, Commissioner, you have our ongoing commitment to work with our trusted partners and my colleagues to remove barriers. And since Elders in Action is here, I'll just say one great example was we used to have a brochure that explained all of our low-income discount programs. And we asked Elders in Action to review it and give us some feedback. Well, we got several pages of single-spaced critique, constructive critique. And everything, I mean, almost everything was wrong with well, we're not on camera right now for some reason. Carla, are you around? But this was small document with very small font and some fairly intimidating language and about a dozen numbers to call was replaced by this document that Elders in Action helped us write, which is in a font that's readable, has one control number, has affirming language, has friendly pictures, and actually explains the program. It took actually a while for us to go from here to there, but that was one barrier we overcame in working with just one community partner to make sure that when this comes in the mail, an older adult feels empowered to use the program and not put off by the program.
That's great. I really appreciate that. And finally, I want to thank you for the longer-term eligibility for these programs, because there is just something kind of cruel about requiring people who are experiencing a static or ongoing reality, whether it's being a low-income senior citizen or someone with a developmental disability, to make them prove that they are still a senior or still disabled on an annual basis. I get to go through that every year, and it's just, you know, I didn't realize that, you know, my son could possibly one day wake up and not have cerebral palsy, so it's just silly to have to prove it year after year after year.
So, colleague, I was in Salem yesterday talking to Representative Rob Noss about net neutrality and some legislation around protecting people's privacy on the internet. And the conversation often boils down to whether there's an opt-in or an opt-out. What industry has figured out that it is usually very unlikely that someone's going to opt in, that just the burdens of life, the time requirements, other things. So they frame it as a you've got an opt-out, knowing that most people won't take the time to opt out. So things like your browsing history will now no longer be private. Well, you know, my browsing history today generally it consists of reading articles about medical issues and other things. So by that information being shared, there's a grotesque violation of my privacy in having that information out there. What we want to do is make it low barrier. We don't want people to have to jump through a lot of hoops. And I think it's fair to say that you've made it clear that in the one-year report, you want to know how barrier-free it is. And if there's other things we can do, we'll continue to reduce those barriers. So thank you.
Yes, I do want to see that in the one-year report. Thank you.
So I guess I want to know how – I'm looking at your income distribution chart, and it shows some 52,000 Portland households at the poverty level. And I'm assuming, you know, a great proportion of those are multifamily dwellers. So $600,000 doesn't seem like enough, I guess. How did you come up with the $600,000?
That's a great question. And so we keep saying that we're investing in an existing system. We're going to leverage an existing trusted partner, and that's true. But this is a brand new effort for the Water Bureau, and we expect there to be a few bumps in the road and a couple of creases to be ironed out. And we have to take these things step by step. First of all, we want to know if it works. That's going to be the main metric of success. Not really the amount of people we serve, although that's important in the first year. We want to know how that dollar travels through the agencies and gets to the end user. From that point on, we have a foundation to build from, I think. But in the first year, we want to see if it works. But if you actually want to know about the number, where that number comes from, the 600,000, mm-hmm. Well, we determined the 80% discount or rebate at about $500. We asked Home Forward how many cases they served in eviction prevention last year. It was about 1,200. You do the math and you get 600,000. That's why we're capping it at that in the first year.
Okay. And maybe this is I want to say, first of all, I really like this.
Can I say, Dan? Yeah.
We're distinguishing between cost-burdened people and people who are at risk of eviction. And so by focusing on people that are at risk of eviction, and that could be a family with a child, for example, mm-hmm. that then goes through a parade of horribles, maybe on the street, kid gets yanked out of the school, whatever. By focusing on evictions, we're talking about the most acute problems. At some point, we could focus more broadly on cost-burdened households where people are paying more than 50% of their income. But at least initially, our view is at least they have a roof over their head. They may be trading off other necessities of life. Our focus is going to be people who, but for this program, would be on the street. And then, as we know, the parade of horribles kicks in, and the cost to the family and to society is overwhelming.
And I wanted to start by saying I like these proposals a lot. I think they're great and will make a difference. This is maybe a subject for the negotiation of the intergovernmental agreement with Home Forward, but have you arrived on an administrative overhead rate that would be charged by Home Forward and also by the 19 participating entities?
My housing commissioner?
Yeah, 5% is always good administrative overhead for me.
No, that's a really good question. That's something we're figuring out with Home Forward. To what extent will this additional money burden their own administrative costs and also the agencies? Right now, we're in talks with Home Forward. We talked to them yesterday. We'll continue that conversation going forward. But we're expecting minimal to zero at the minimum. But
zero is good, but Commissioner Saltzman will take out his he'll be looking very closely at what the cumulative overhead is. So that's a conversation as we, if we get to the point of crafting an IGA, right, we'll want to document that very carefully.
And we'll be happy to speak with your staff between now and May to keep them updated.
So I think this is a brilliant solution, and I really appreciate all the work that's gone in it. Commissioner Fish, it looks like you cracked something that has eluded previous administrations, and I appreciate that. I just say for myself, I think the administrative costs are the administrative costs, and when we continually ask those administrating to do more with less, it ends up people burning out, and I don't think that's fair. So I am not going to be particularly, I mean, obviously I care about what that is, but let's be realistic, because as we found out in the arts tax, if we're not realistic, the program doesn't work very well. I also am concerned, as Commissioner Udaly is, about people whose situation is not going to change, and it's not a lost job, a divorce, a car. Northwest Pilot Projects mentioned that they thought we should have a Section P voucher, which essentially would be like the Section 8, but which the City of Portland would figure out. There are some people, seniors in particular, who are on fixed incomes. They're never going to get more money. They're certainly probably at 80-odd, not going to get a well-paying job. So factoring that into this is the cost that a person can then rent an apartment for ongoing, I think would be something that we should be looking at overall. There's people experiencing mental health challenges are another group of folks who it's actually cheaper to look after them than it is to not look after them. And so I hope that that will be part, you know, obviously this is a start. As you develop the program, I'd just like to keep that in mind, and also the Housing Bureau.
So Commissioner, spot on. I will tell you that if we broaden the lens of this program and we move away from a clear nexus to the ability of someone to pay the water sewer charge as a component of the of their cost burden, the legal analysis may shift a little bit, in which case it may be a broader discussion about ratepayer dollars and general fund dollars as we serve a broader population. I just want to preview that for you. I'd let the lawyers have the final say in it. But what we've tried to do is carefully calibrate this program so that our dollars are targeting people for whom that water and sewer charge really is almost like the straw that breaks the camel's back.
Very good point. And indeed, in our rent hearings, we have heard that, haven't we, that people have been added a utility charge and that's it. So obviously, I like the way you've set this up, as this is part of the mix. And if it's a broader thing, we would have to look at the broader issues. I also want to state on the record that the Anderson lawsuit was settled as if it had never happened. And so I believe it. We always had the right to do things like this that are allowed in the charter. So I'm glad that you're moving forward on this, and I hope that we're not in the future going to refer to what was said in the Anderson lawsuit either one way or the other, because the settlement says it's null and void.
Remembering that in one of the rulings we agreed with in the Anderson case, the judge said that we had the discretion to reduce systems development charge fees based on some rational system. And so we understand that we have, as a council under the charter, the right to interpret the charter and apply it in a reasonable way. I foresee a day when a combination of ratepayer dollars and general fund dollars gets to this larger question of affordability that isn't our current focus, which is at people at most risk of being evicted.
And I'd just like to throw a couple of numbers at you. We crunched the numbers last year of our current participating low-income customers, and over half of those folks were in an income bracket between 0 and 30% of median family income. Again, half of those were on fixed incomes, things like SSI, Social Security, TANF. And that went into, I think it's proposal number 4, where we're expanding that extra discount or providing more of a discount for that bracket, knowing that those folks are very unlikely to increase their income eligibility in the future, and providing that extra relief.
That's your cue, Dan.
Yeah, at the January meeting where we had the auditor provide briefings on some of her audits recently, including assistance to multifamily customers, I was startled to see the statistic that 8%